Good afternoon, Montreal. It's 2:05, and you're listening to Movement Museum. My name is Katie Belanger, and I'm here with Allison Elizabeth Burns, and we are your hosts for today for Movement Museum on CKT 90.3. We've got a show full of reviews and a little discussion of current events in dance, and we're just going to kind of like fill your brains full of information. The way we like to do so, and you know, it'll make a nice break from all that interviewing we normally do. So do you want to talk a little bit, maybe, Allison, about the show that we saw last night? We saw the You Show, Crystal Pite, at La Gare de la Danse.
Yes, and if you've been in tune with us, you know we've all been very excited about this production. So Crystal Pite is a legend now. She has created her company called Kid Pivot, based in Vancouver, in 2002. And she actually, to back up a little bit on her personal history, she joined the Ballet British Columbia when she was 17 and performed with the company for 8 years. And unlike most dancers, she did not attend a professional school attached to the company. Instead, she studied at a private studio in Victoria, BC, under Maureen Eastick and Wendy Green. In 1995, she became the youngest artist to receive the prestigious Clifford E. Lee Choreographic Award, and this started one of many awards that she would receive over her lifetime, and she's not done yet. She is just getting started, I am sure. So she left BC in 1996 to join the Francophone Ballet under the direction of William Forsythe, and knowing that now, it makes a lot of sense in terms of how she moves and how she inspires her performers to move, that influence from Forsythe. Then she came back to Canada in 2001 and was appointed resident choreographer for the Grand Ballet Jazz de Montréal. She was there for 3 years. Then she started Kid Pivot in 2002. And she has already produced several works with the company, one of which I was fortunate enough to see beforehand, which was Dark Matters, back 2 years ago, I believe. Anyway, she is noted for her humor and fearless technique. And, oh my goodness, we're going to get right into all of that when we talk about this show that we've seen. And just a note, this track actually underneath us right now is one from the show last night. Just sparse but beautiful. And we're going to be playing a different track a little later on of a completely different flavor to kind of show you in sound the range of this performance. So, my goodness, the You Show. It was presented at Agora, as Katie was saying. It was a two-hour-long show. It's a 100-minute-long show with a 20-minute intermission. And you're like, okay, you can take an intermission if you're going to be dancing for 2 hours. No worries. And it's packed. There's not a lot of filler in this show. What she's done is she's broken it into kind of four sections. So in each act, there are two pieces, but all of the pieces are intertwined, both in movement and loosely in thematic as well. I think the first half was a little bit, I'm going to take that back. There's a salting of theater in her work, but it's undeniably movement-based, and it's just incredible. Just to kind of set it up, there's how many performers, Katie?
In the work?
Quite a few.
There are a ton. I think we saw eight dancers.
And the first three kind of sections are all duets, and then the last is a bigger group piece with everybody. And all the performers are mostly wearing socks.
Which is a thing we've been seeing. I've been seeing a lot of recently, and this is going out to all those dance studio teachers everywhere who are like, you can't wear your socks at the studio. You can't wear your socks. Professionals do it.
I think it depends also on what you're doing with the socks, though, because in her movement, like, you need to be your water, your fluid. You need to slide. And I was saying to Katie last night, like, it's as if standing and the floor work and standing work are the same thing. There's no transition between the two of them. It just all flows.
Absolutely.
And aside from that, for costumes, it's very pedestrian wear, mostly dark outfits, and, you know, relatively loose
hair. I thought they looked
a
little bit like ninjas.
Oh, I think that was probably intentional in the later half of the work. Okay, so setting up the scene a little bit before we get into the juicy details, because I think I'm getting ahead of myself. The first section is the lights play a really big role in the work. They're all these standing lights on wheels around the stage. Very tall, very like futuristic, I would say, in appeal. And the soundtrack starts and says, "This is your voice." And it's this female voice, and it's just like, "This is your voice. Here it is again. Here it is again." So, of course, coming into this, the title of the work being The You Show, you're expecting it to have something to do with you. And this is the approach. And it's also the first performer comes out and it's like, "This is you. This is your hand. This is your back. This is you reaching back." And it's kind of an interesting, like, step by step of how to be empathetic towards the performer, I felt. I don't know. And so you have a male performer, and then you are introduced to a female performer, and both as you. And through some text overlaying, the performers go through a few different scenes, I would say. It's kind of like a piece of text is taken, it's abstracted, it's repeated, and the movement goes through the same kind of system, and you see things going backwards and forwards and slowing down, and it's just, it almost doesn't even matter the context, because the movement is so powerful in itself. Of that first scene, the thing that stood out the most for me was this solo done by, I believe it's Peter Chu, who just blew my mind. He was in Dark Matters as well, and it just, I remembered him on stage even 2 years later. I was like, "I know who you are." I expect good things. And the text at that moment was like, "This is you hitting the floor. This is the sound of your heart as it hits the floor," and so on and so forth. And just having him going from standing to lying in various kind of like isolated moments, and then flowing it, and then backing it up, and suspending moments, and just such right on the moments where it stops, and very fluid the moment where it flows, and this very powerful soundtrack and overlaying voice to it was really effective. So we go through sections like that for the first half, and eventually the two of them come together, and there's a male-female duet, which is very lovely to watch, and then they walk away, and it's the end of that moment. It's the end of that relationship, I would say. And then the second vignette, or second act, let's say, is two male dancers who look shockingly similar when all dressed up to look alike. And they kind of start with the mirror. And I mean, you know, I've went to dance school, as did Katie. You know,
yeah, it's sort of like a mime exercise in which, you know, like one waxes on while the other waxes off. Yeah. I mean, it inevitably ends up like that. Like, I lift my arm and you lift your arm at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's usually very simple, but in this case, not so much.
It was just the way it was done. It was done so well, so powerful. And again, just the... There's a great attention to detail in terms of the set and the lights and the sound that she pays to her choreography, that it really enhances it. Like it she must have conceptualized the atmosphere at the same moment that she conceptualized the piece, you know, because they're walking in between this row of lights, and the row of lights is the mirrored surface, so you can really see this illusion. You know it's an illusion, but you can't help but love it and feel you're being tricked by it, and you want to be tricked by it. And they go on to do kind of a series of different types of manipulation, body manipulation, and the most impressive one there, of course, was one performer miming, manipulating the other one just a few feet away, and the other reacting. And it was just the precision, the perfection of the movement is what sells it. And it's at that moment where I thought, hey, Crystal is, she's a magician, you know, she's not a choreographer, she's a magician. So that was quite beautiful, quite impressive. And again, there's a lot of dancing, and you see a duet between the two of them, and it's so soft and it's strong and it's just, bah. the wordless.
The second half begins with a duet for a man and a woman, and they're performing. It seems like a bit of a it's combative, but it's also loving. It seemed like a street fight to me in many ways, but a street fight between two people who knew each other really well. And that theme carries over into the second work of the second half. I guess to me, what constantly impresses me about, I didn't see Dark Matters, but I saw Lost Action in 2006, also, I believe, at L'Agora. And, what I leave all of Crystal's work thinking is those dancers are breathtaking. Mm-hmm. They're just unbelievable.
Superhuman.
Absolutely. Totally superhuman. And
there were moments in the show where I just kind of, I throw up my hands or I'm just like, what? I don't understand how that happens.
Well, exactly. I mean, these are the kinds of performers who raise their leg to nearly 180 degrees with the same sort of ease and grace that most people, you know, like make a hand gesture. And so, I mean, that just stays with you. The second work in the second half, the This Is You Flying, had just the most fantastic text and a sort of superhero theme going on, where he's addressing us. You are doing this. It's you. But he's sort of giving us that, he's personifying us on stage. And the text is really humorous, and this is maybe why you have problems in your relationships. It ends up devolving into sort of a fight between a couple, but a fight between a couple set on this epic stage. And the whole work, the second work of the second half, is just so epic with the loud music and sound mm-hmm. effects.
And yeah, I thought of like a graphic novel or something like that.
Absolutely. Like, or
distorted. And
or a Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
And what I found interesting about the text in the second half is he talks about how you get to a point where you just can't do it anymore. You know, there are too many bad guys and you're down for the count and you're out of juice and you just can't do it anymore. But you have to get up. You have to get out of there and you have to take everybody with you. And as I'm watching him and listening to him, my immediate thought was, this is, and normally I don't do this. Normally I don't interpret other people's work on the radio, but in this case, it was such a strong, overwhelming feeling that I had, that it felt like what we were really talking about was these dancers and the way that they put it all out there every yeah. night after night, and that they do have to bring all of us with them. That's their job.
I completely got that too. Yeah, I felt that way as well. I was like, well, yeah, you are superhuman and you are like giving your all the time, and even when you feel sore, you got to keep going.
Absolutely.
You got to keep doing it.
Absolutely. And that they work through the pain and they work through the constant jet lag. And I mean, these dancers have been on tour for months now, and they'll continue to stay on tour for a while. And it was a very funny, poignant text about what it is to persevere, and how that because it's so all encompassing and so because it's so overwhelming in your life, becomes difficult to explain to other people who don't understand the context, why it's so important to you. And of course, the dancing is just magic. It's incredible. These dancers are, we've used the word precision already, but they're, I think that maybe it's one of those things you have to see to understand how precise somebody could be with the degree to which they can lift their leg in the air.
I think another note too is that it's very free movement.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it's very, like I was saying earlier, fluid and flow and just like, oh, like just, it looks like fun, you know, but again, they are precise in that. So they just kind of like slip and slide and whoop, all of a sudden I'm doing a triple, the pirouette and attitude, like you were saying.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And then you land it, no problem, in like a deep lunge or something ridiculous like that. Like they hit everything, but nothing looks, nothing's robotic necessarily, unintentionally.
Yeah, I mean, there was a whole hilarious section where the dancers formed these huge sort of like Iron Man robotic suits around a couple. And I won't give it all away because, of course, the show is still going on. But it's, let's say that it's a must see.
Yeah, I would say so. If you're curious about dance or if you're like, I don't know what I'm going to, go see this one. If it's not already sold out, get in line because it's
absolutely
amazing.
And I think that after seeing Lost Action, I think it's really interesting that Pite is taking this much, I would say, much more theatrical direction. And what I mean by theatrical, and I was thinking about it last night because it's hard to put your finger on what that means. But in this case, it means a lot of facial expressions and a lot of, I am clearly trying to express a particular emotion on stage. And I think that a lot of the time the dance that we see is more ambiguous than that. And in this case, it was very clear that there were some very particular kinds of conflicts that she was wishing to convey the meaning of on stage. And I felt that the dancing was out of this world, but sometimes the theater didn't work for me. It didn't work for me because I failed to connect to it the same way I was connecting to the movement. And I mean, and the text was great. So it was like, I didn't know what wasn't there for me, but it wasn't as integrated as I thought it would be.
This kind of skims what you're saying, but I thought there was a charm in the work because it was funny, but it was technically strong as well. And that's something I don't think we see a lot of. I think often when you see a work that is humorous, that is its foundation, its crutch.
Yeah, absolutely. And in this case, I mean, the dancing and I mean that last section with the text and him dressed in this sort of like superhero suit was effective because it was so funny and so relatable, and yet his dancing was so incredibly fully embodied. So it was, I'm interested to see if Pite continues in this like theatrical direction, because her work has always had those kinds of like almost sometimes cinematic elements in terms of the lighting. The lighting is totally cinematic, and the music, it's just reminiscent. The whole second half to me was really reminiscent of an action film. And maybe it's that, you know, I'm not normally like deeply moved by action films either. So who knows?
Again, the text in that piece did make you think of something else and did bring you somewhere else.
Oh, absolutely.
It was intellectual as well as entertaining, which is like kind of the trifectum of a good dance piece. It's like entertaining, intellectual, and just talent.
Yeah. It was spectacular.
I just wanted to note, because Katie brushed on this and I didn't mention it earlier, that they do have titles, these four sections. The first is A Picture of You Falling. The second is The Other You. That is with the mirrored and the body manipulation. The third is Das Glashaus. Glashaus? Huh? And the last is, of course, A Picture of You Flying, which is the one that we're mostly talking about now. It's the bigger group piece. And just on a note for that, in terms of choreographically, I think she did such a nice job. There was a few, I don't know, you call them tricks. I'm not going to, it's not canon and it's not unison. She's found these really interesting ways to use a group and just
breathtaking.
Yeah. And really like, how come that hasn't been done before? Or like, I want to do that. That's beautiful.
Why don't we play that track from the show and then we'll come back with
Sounds
a little more
good. Okay. So keep in mind everything we've been telling you about action movies and whatnot when you listen to this. Welcome back to Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM. It is now 2:28. Just before that ad, we were playing a piece of music by Owen Belton, and that is part of the original score for The You Show by Crystal Pite that we were also talking about in the first half of the show. And if all of that hasn't convinced you to go see it, I don't know what will, but you still have a chance. It's playing the 22nd, 23rd at 8, and the 24th at 4, and that's at Agora de la Danse. Get your tickets early because it was already sold out last night. I don't know what it looks like for the rest of the run.
Well, so I am going to talk about some really exciting new developments at the level of the budget. The provincial
Yay.
Budget. I know. This is rarely a topic of like, sweet, the budget. Let's talk about that. But I received from Le Regroupement Québécois de la Danse their press release about the budget, and evidently the finance minister in tandem with, I mean, the rest of the cabinet have decided to allocate over the next 5 years a total of $6 million to the development of dance companies in Quebec, which is, of course, like mega, mega exciting.
What is that in comparison to? Do you know?
That's a 10% increase. So the current amount, it's around $10 million. So it's going to essentially amount to a 10% increase every year for five years.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a very exciting new development. And in the press release, the RQD really highlights that this is coming at a really important time and a really really strategic time for dance in Quebec. The money is going to come through the CALQ, the Conseil des Arts et des Lettres du Québec, which will administer the money and will, dole it out. And the plan directeur de la danse professionnelle au Québec 2011-2021 is a huge plan that was unveiled last year by many, many stakeholders in dance and in government to highlight the... I mean, dance in Quebec had a huge boom in the 80s and has essentially been, you know, in some ways riding that boom nonstop since then. And there are many things outlined in the plan directeur that point out that that's not necessarily the most effective way to continue to grow an industry and to continue to grow a cultural heritage. And of course, dance is from Quebec is seen all over the world. It's an ambassador for Quebec and for Canada. And so the investment by the government in dance is a real sign of their confidence and a real sign of, to my mind, an economic shrewdness, frankly, because this is an industry that, as the plan directeur points out, has been continuing to grow over many years despite financial cutbacks and despite, in some cases, very dwindling resources or very small resources to begin with in the first place. So, I mean, if a group of people can get something going and keep it going on very little, I think that the reasoning is, what can they not do with a little bit more cash? And I think that this plan of it going out over 5 years in a gradual manner is going to allow that to be integrated really well into the plan directeur, which outlines a really clear and really intelligent 10-year plan for dance in Quebec. So the communiqué de presse also really highlights the minister pour la culture des... La culture des communications et de la condition féminine, Christine Saint-Pierre, who has been really pushing for this and has been really an advocate in government for the dance community in Quebec. And also, I would just really like to congratulate the RQD on their ongoing support and their ongoing incredible advocacy for the 500 dance professionals that make up their ranks, and for the dance community in general. And they're really, in some ways, leading the way in Canada as a professional association. So that's awesome, and I'm so pleased to hear that. In addition to that, the finance minister has announced it's a total of $60 million to the Quebec Cultural Heritage Fund. So there's some cultural money coming down the pipe pretty soon, which is an exciting development. And another sort of budgetary news, in Longueuil, the Conseil des Arts de Longueuil has increased their budget over the next couple of years by 35%. So the mayor of Longueuil is really pushing to make Longueuil a cultural hotspot and to encourage the emerging artists of Longueuil to continue to stay in Longueuil and to work in Longueuil. So it's that's an exciting development as well. Two other sort of like, well, isn't that interesting? Articles I will direct our listeners' attention to an article in Le Devoir about cultural engagement on the level of Quebec as it compares to the other provinces. And according to this article, and according to a study put forward by Hill Strategies Research, which is I believe an Ontario think tank sort of situation, Quebecers are actually less likely to go to the theater, to go to cultural events and national parks, etc., than their Albertan and British Columbian counterparts. Apparently, British Columbia and Alberta lead the way in cultural engagement. in this country. That's also, it is to be mentioned, and you can read the article on Le Devoir in their culture section, or you could, I assume, pick up a paper because it's from today, this article. But I mean, Quebecers are on par with their Anglo-Canadian counterparts for things like buying CDs, or probably in this case MP3s, thanks Hill Strategies. I don't know who buys CDs anymore. You know, things like other cultural activities. But yeah, Alberta and BC leading the way. And the lone commenter on the Le Devoir website, who had something to say about this, pointed out that in Alberta, people have a lot of extra cash to throw around, and maybe that's why they go to the zoo so much. So I was like,
do they go to the zoo a lot?
Apparently British Columbians and Albertans are leading the way in national park visits, which makes sense because of course Jasper and Banff national parks lie on the border between BC and Alberta and are like easy to get to and full of skiing. So it's no small wonder that Albertans are going.
When you talk about zoos as parks, that makes sense to me. I'm thinking, I'm like, what about Sundays at Tam Tams? Like, there's so many Montrealers in the park.
Fair
enough.
But
if you're actually tallying people in the park, it makes more sense that you're,
yeah, no, it's like
what
a
kind of parks you're talking about.
Parks with gates, I suppose, and like entrance fees.
So my takeaway there is apply for grants now and or move out west.
But only if you want to work in a zoo.
Or have people at your show, apparently.
Yeah. So that was interesting. And then there's also an article on Le Monde, which is a French paper, which it gives a little profile of Quebec dance because evidently Frédéric Gravel, Dave Saint-Pierre, Julie André T, who I've never heard of, Benoît Lachambe, Daniel Levillé, and a couple of other people are, Sylvain Amal is currently touring in France as well. So there are a bunch of French artists or Quebecois artists currently touring in France. And only a couple of years ago, that wasn't really the case. The French audiences weren't really as into some of the things that they consider to be sort of hallmarks of Quebecois dance. And I think it's what's very interesting about this article is that the person who's writing the article has some very distinct opinions about what is like considered Quebecois dance and how that can be sort of summed up. And to me, the scene in Quebec, while it does have some things that I would agree with her are pretty like hallmarks in terms of an irreverence and a sort of a sense of play and a sense of humor. And she says that it's a sense of humor that has no vulgarity. And I think that that would be, that seems to be her opinion. There are several people who find Dave Saint-Pierre pretty vulgar. And so it's an interesting article on the level that she makes some distinct statements about what she thinks Quebecois dance is. She also makes some distinct statements, and so do presenters that she interviews and who give statements in the article about Quebecers. So in French, one of the quotes from Didier Fusilier, directeur de la Maison des Arts, I believe in Paris, says, and he's speaking about Frédéric Gravel, il est dans l'instantanéité, le direct, et c'est très rare finalement chez les artistes français. On a la sensation qu'il débarque sur de la rue avec ses copains et monte sur scène comme ça, à la seconde, habillé de la même manière. Tout peut arriver, ce qui n'empêche pas la précision millimétrée du spectacle. So he's speaking about Gravel Works, which is currently showing in France, and I think that to a certain extent, these are things that we do see a lot on stage is, you know, pedestrian clothing, an intensity of movement, a mixing of genre. We see musicians on stage, we see text, we see, you know, frequently people doing things like eating or talking or drinking a beer or generally sort of flouting the rules. And to a certain extent, I guess that we're very used to that. I'm very used to that at this point. You know, when a couple of weeks ago we saw somebody stoke a fire made out of high-heeled shoes and then, you know, curl up with a fur coat on stage, that was totally normal as far as I was concerned. But evidently, according to this author from Le Monde, French audiences are not at all used to that and are just now, in 2012, getting to the point where they really want to see that kind of work. And so Quebec dance artists, specifically these dance artists who are touring presently, are seeing quite a bit of success in France. So I would encourage people to go on Le Monde .fr, their culture section, and Les Danseurs Québécois. It's, and I don't get the joke, and it's in French, but some of our francophone listeners probably will. Danseurs Québécois à poil, au poil. So that's something to do with them being naked all the time, but I don't, I think. sometimes I don't understand French humor. Sorry, guys. So, and that's another point that she makes is that, like, these dancers are naked all the time, just like Daniel Levele. And it's like, that's not always true, guys. Like, I see plenty of clothed dancing. Thank you very much. I do see plenty of nude dancing. It, I mean, that's true. But I see plenty of clothes dancing. Let's not make generalizations here.
Interesting. So that's tip number three. If you're on the contemporary edge of Quebecois dance, go to France. They're going to love you.
Yeah. No. So, I mean, this is just our information hour, our insider's information hour here on Movement Museum.
You've covered a lot in a very short period of time.
Well, you know, I do what I can. so yeah, please do check out those articles, and a bunch of them you can find, with the exception of the article from Le Monde, you can find them all in the Au fil de presse section of QuébecDanse.org, which is the website of the RQD, the Regroupement Québécois de la Danse. They very effectively round up all the press stuff and stick it up on their website. It's like a one-stop shop. It's very useful.
So we have a few more reviews, and we're going to see how many we can get through, because we've been neglecting some of these for quite some time now. But I think it's important to still give a shout out to these choreographers so that on their victory lap, you can catch them if it sounds interesting. A while back in February, the 22nd to the 26th at Mainline Theater, there was a show called Scary Tales and Broken Hearts. And this was a production by Lindsay Billing. It was a work that it was told to me that she's been working on this for about a year now, this piece, and has presented various versions of it. And this is kind of like the up-to-date polished version. So I suspect it will be coming back again. And it's with in collaboration with Entre Deux. And she has a huge ensemble, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 performers, and herself, I believe. Oh, no, she's in there now. So 6 people on stage. There's one male and the rest are female performers. The whole theme of the evening is fairy tales and bedtime stories. So there are 2 chapters, she calls them, with an intermission in between. The first is called Chapter 1, Time for Bed, and the second is Dans la Forêt. So you get the idea that it is A, bilingual, and B, that she's kind of categorized her tales this way. And it's just very short vignettes, some longer than others, with elaborate costuming and sets and Quebec jazz style movement. I mean, I think it's billed as contemporary, but you still see a lot of that kind of kicks and turns and I can't remember if they're padabourés necessarily, but you're on the right track for sure. So these are very talented young performers who've obviously got a lot of training. And the costumes were actually, well, costumes are accredited to Lindsay Billing, but Kim Billing worked on the sculptures and the masks and the accessories, which were honestly really impressive. For example, if you could see in one of her advertisements, this woman with a fish head.
Wow.
And it's about maybe a foot and a half higher than her head. Mm. And it sits on her shoulders, and she's wearing like a silver bikini. Hmm. And she does a solo as a fish and kind of moves her ribs as if she's dying. Anyway, that was an impressive piece. Another example of something, she would take these little like recognizable scenarios and just twist them slightly for you, like a little girl chasing a butterfly and then eating it or something like that. Every once in a while there was a poem read out that was like a twisted kind of Edward Gorey type poem. Mm. And just little scenes set up where you're like, oh, that's the boogeyman. Oh, that one's Little Red Riding Hood. Oh, I get it. I'm not sure of that one. There was one with the woman with the green ribbon around her neck.
The woman whose head eventually falls off.
Exactly, yeah. And I was like, I don't remember this, but it's striking something in me. So it's a fun thing to play with. It's a different genre than what I usually see. It's than what we usually cover. So that was interesting for me.
Well, I would like to cram in a bunch of reviews.
Give her
small style. So quickly, and because honestly, I was so overcome, I've had trouble preparing what I was going to say about it. Of course, I've been ranting and raving, and our poor listeners have had to listen to me talk about how much I'm excited to see Batsheva. And I saw them a couple of weeks ago performing Hora by Ohad Naharin. And I would like to first say that when I saw Ohad Naharin choreographing for Le Grand Ballet, I was not impressed. I did not like his work. I was really irritated. I didn't understand what the hype was about. But there's something about it, I was like, you know, this is going to be great. And it was, no exaggeration, transcendent. It was one of the most beautiful things I think I will ever see. So let me just quickly explain it for you. The dancers stay on stage the entire time, and the stage is lime green. The floor of the stage, the walls of the stage, the back wall, they're all lime green. And there's a very long bench on the back wall. And there are 10 dancers, six women and four men. Yes, six women and four men. One, two, three.
This is why we need to do these more regularly.
So the dancers are just, I mean, sometimes, you know, you come across quotations about dancers, like Einstein said that dancers are the athletes of God, and, you know, Martha Graham says movement doesn't lie, and those kinds of things, you see many beautiful works and many valuable works and things that, you know, in many ways have changed my life. And then I see something like this and I'm like, oh, these are the athletes of God. Okay. All right. Now I'm beginning to get what the hyperbole was about. I feel like these dancers, there was nothing that they couldn't do. And it wasn't just impressive because of their virtuosity. Their virtuosity disappeared because what I felt was happening on stage was just, it became a pure experience. I wasn't thinking about it anymore, and I was just absorbing it. In the first couple of minutes of the work, I did absorb a couple of little things that really, like, I thought were very interesting. The music ranges from Die Walküre by Richard Wagner to 2001 A Space Odyssey, the theme, music from Star Wars, all the way up to Claude Debussy's Clair de Lune. So he pulls some like heavy hitters out of the music box. But early on in the work, there's music, and then the music stops. And we're in Théâtre des Mises en Œuvre, which is quite large. And it's absolute silence, and there's a soloist on stage, and the only thing you can hear is the sound of people breathing and him squeaking on the marley flooring. And to me, that required a lot of chutzpah. I was like, okay, you're not only placing the confidence in this one human to hold all of our attention, but you're not even giving him the help of music to bring us all along with him. it's just him out there alone, with his, you know, his comrades watching him. Everybody's watching him. And the movement is the part that I'm going to have the most trouble describing, because Ohad Naharan is known for a technique called Gaga, which is a nonsense word because, as far as he's concerned, he doesn't want to have to name things. And I think that in some ways, the movement looks like nonsense a lot of the time. One thing that doesn't make any sense follows another thing that doesn't make any sense. And then there's a total lack of context for any one movement. And yet the things flow constantly into one another. And there are motifs that come back, and the motifs don't make any sense. And I didn't care. I didn't care that it didn't make any sense, because it wasn't about making sense. It was about this sort of pure experience for me. And I'm being very rapturous, but honestly, I had a conversation, and I'll end with this. I had a conversation with somebody recently about how dancers all over the world are starting to pull more and more theater into their work. And I don't know if historically that's accurate, that there's more theater and dance now than there was, say, in the 70s. But sometimes I get the impression that we're seeing more text on stage than we are other elements that we could perhaps be seeing. And she was of the opinion that that's because choreographers are looking for tools to be able to say things they feel like they can't say with movement. And watching Hora made me feel as though if you're the right choreographer, you can say everything with movement. Mm-hmm. And with like a couple of hilariously chosen musical compositions. Just a quick to credit the arranger and performer of the music, Isao Tomita. The costume design, the design in general were incredible. But it was Hora and it was Ohad Naharan, and it played at the Place des Arts from the 1st to the 3rd of March, and it was a Danse Danse production. And I sincerely hope, I'm sure we'll be seeing more and more of Ohad in the next couple of years. And if you want to read up a little bit more on his work, then there's just tons of stuff online about him, and you can look that up and get more history and backstory on Batsheva and his work. But it was everything I expected and more. It blew my mind wide open.
You made me think of that Pina Bausch quote, and I can't think of it now, the specifics, but along the lines of like using dance to say exactly what you mean to say.
And things that can be, so frequently I hear the idea that, you know, dance expresses what cannot be said with words. And honestly, I see a lot of dance that, and this is not necessarily a criticism by any stretch of the imagination, could be explained with words. Like what is happening on stage could just as easily have been a text of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that anything I saw on stage the other night could be expressed to me as deeply as it was by watching those people move. And that was an important experience for me to have, I think. And it's one of those things where I just wish that we could just give out free tickets to everybody and everybody would go and see it.
Here's the question, the way you started it. Mm-hmm. You don't think you'll ever see anything as wonderful as that. It's like, do you just give up now? Do you stop seeing dance?
I don't know that I'm not. And I think it's one of the most important things that I'll ever see. I've seen things that were equally as important to me and very different.
All right, everybody, we're going to have to say goodbye. I'm Allison Burns here with Katie Bélanger, and we've been at Movement Museum this Thursday afternoon. Just to let you know, you can visit us at movement-museum.blogspot.com, and you can listen to all our old episodes. You can check out links and videos and whatnot. What else? You can also download us off of iTunes and carry us in your pocket on your iPhone or whatever. And just a note before we say goodbye, quick little highlight for Dance Calendar. Next week at Usine C, they're producing a show called Lucy Lost Her Heart. And it's, I believe, a Calgary group
Theater Junction.
Theater Junction. There we go. And that looks super interesting. Jen and I are going to go and check it out too, because it looks totally bizarre and totally fun. Do you have anything you want to point out before we say goodbye?
I would like to point out to everybody to go see the U Show, obviously, if you can get some more tickets. And we'll see you, or you'll hear us, rather, next week.